experience, hopefully, this book and your power in a new way. Help us to set aside everything we think we know so that we may have a new experience that is very important that we're able to do that. We see this for me. So we just thank you for this space and for these people, for this fellowship, for this wonderful program of action that you've given us. Amen.
Amen.
Sorry, I'm Megan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Megan.
This is a cool thing that we're doing here. Danielle is going to be our speaker tonight. She and I met, almost 4 years ago. And, she asked me to take her through the steps. And I was a little nervous because everyone in my life at that time had warned me that she was completely nuts. And this was before I even met her. And it turned out all that was true, but but when we met, we immediately hit it off, and it was like, it was one of those things where the big book talks about, like, we're walking hand in hand, right, as we sort of trudge this road to a happy destiny, whatever. I know that sounds kind of cheesy, but it was true. Like, when she and I met, we just linked up. We had we started to form an incredible friendship. And more importantly than that, I watched her transform. I watched her, show up as someone who, and she hasn't lost the edge, right? She hasn't lost the edge in any way, shape, or form. She's still 100% Danielle Godey in my mind, even though she's an incredible married woman with a baby and an incredible family and doing incredible things and has helped a ton of people and impresses me on a regular basis. She's fun and she's incredible and she's had a transformation as a result of this 12-step process. So I hope you guys enjoy her.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Hey, everyone. I'm Danielle, and I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Hey,
I'm
going
to sit because my husband wants to sit after me, and so I figured I wouldn't be awkward and stand, and then he said make him look like he was lazy. So... so I'm going to sit also, and it's more comfortable, obviously. I made myself an outline tonight because I feel like I'm really scatterbrained now, and I feel like I go in all these weird directions when I'm trying to, like, really hit specific points when I'm telling my story, and I, like, kind of get off on a tangent, and it doesn't really, make sense, or it's not relevant, or it's not as important as, like, what I really want to get across. So I made an outline for tonight. Yes, my sobriety date is May 1st, 2015, so almost 4 years. I think I have a lot of the same shit that everybody has, the kind of crazy upbringing and, it was just life, like everybody has their own story or whatever. But I guess I never had, like, really the coping skills to deal with life. They were never, like, really taught to me, and I don't think my parents really knew how to teach them to me. So I'm just going to kind of fast forward to when I was about 10 years old, because everything was pretty normal up until then. My parents married. I had a younger brother. We had a house. We had dogs. I went to school. Like, nothing super crazy. But when I was about 10, my parents started having problems, and it was really apparent, and, the dynamics of the household changed, and they ended up getting divorced, and it was a really nasty time for my mom in particular. My dad, like, had an affair and, like, was with this woman, and they had a baby, and so he was kind of, like, making his own life, and my mom was just really depressed and at a loss of what to do, she was suffering from her own stuff and not really capable of paying too much attention to what was going on with me and the things I was experiencing as a result of the divorce and stuff like that. She had a boyfriend after my parents got divorced, and, it was a pretty quick relationship for her. She, like, met him, she went on vacation with one of her girlfriends and came back with a boyfriend, and, like, he lived in New York, and she was like, oh, he's going to move in with us, and I was like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, it was just really bizarre. It was a really strange time, and mind you, this whole time, I'm, like, crying to go live with my dad. Like, I didn't want to have anything to do with my mom. I always wanted to be with my dad. I was a daddy's girl. Daddy never did anything wrong, of course. So it's like, you know, I just wanted to be with him. So, you know, this guy moves in with us, and my whole family's from Belgium. My parents are from Belgium. My grandparents are from Belgium. Everybody lives in Belgium but my parents. And her parents from Belgium came and stayed with us when they first got divorced. So we've got her parents staying with us, her new boyfriend living with us. My brother is like the golden child at the time. He's 2 years younger than me. And then there's just kind of me, like, what is going on in my life, you know? I didn't know it at the time, but I'm like depressed. I'm like really angry about everything. I don't have any friends. I am just kind of a weird little kid at this point, and awkward and uncomfortable and whatever. And you know, shit happened. Like, my mom worked a lot and her boyfriend was home a lot. I don't know what he did, really, honestly. But I really don't. I don't know what he did. He was always home. But, like, shit just started to get kind of weird, and, like, he ended up, like, trying to see me naked a few times, and, like, I told my mom, and she was like, you know, you're being dramatic, like, you just want to go live with your dad. Like, she just didn't believe me, you know, long story short. And my grandparents at the time, you know, they were, like, hitting on us all the time, and, like, beating the shit out of my brother, to be quite honest. And we were, like, kids, you know, we didn't know what was really going on. We were just being kids and playing with our friends and eating snacks out of the pantry. And, like, before I know it, I've got this guy molesting me. My grandparents are hitting on us. Our pantry's locked up. And my mom doesn't, like, really believe anything I'm telling her at this point. So that was a lot for, like, an 11, 12-year-old to be taken on at that point. I ended up getting into a fistfight with my mom at a young age. And she was like, I'm done with you, like, go live with your dad. And I was like, thank God, finally, you know, like, this is what I wanted. Her and her boyfriend broke up. I don't know what my dad did to that man, but he was gone pretty quickly after I told my dad what happened. And I ended up moving in with my dad. And so at this point, my dad and my stepmom had another kid, and my little brother's pretty young at this point. He's, like, months old. And my stepmom turns out to be a meth addict. And so she's, like, kind of doing her own thing all the time, running around. And I say it so nonchalantly, but it was just, like, normal life at this point, you know? It was just, like, the norm to, like, have chaos going on. So it wasn't, like, some shocking thing that, you know, good old stepmommy's on the meth, you know? Like, it was just like, oh, she's on the shit again. Okay, like, all right, so I got put in a position of having a lot of responsibility when I was really young once I moved in with my dad. My little brother's name was Nicholas, and he was, like, basically my child to an extent. Like, you know, I took care of him in the middle of the night. I got him up in the mornings. I gave him a bottle before I went to school. Like, I would always talk to my dad about who was going to take care of Nicholas later. And, you know, my stepmom would kind of come and go over the years, so she was, like, kind of in the picture, but not really in the picture. And it finally got to a point where she wasn't in the picture at all. But finally, by the age of 12, it was, like, I was so miserable inside, and, you know, I was just like, you know what, fuck this. Like, we've got a liquor cabinet, why not? And I specifically remember going into the liquor cabinet and being like, ooh, creme de menthe, that'll be delicious. And took my first drink then, and it was disgusting and amazing all at the same time. I don't think I really got drunk. I think I just got kind of buzzed. And then, like, between that and just kind of getting the balls to have a few drinks and then, like, hanging out with way older kids, and they're like, oh, let's eat some Coracetins. I'm like, yes, let's do that. Like, and I mean, we'd go to the pharmacy and we'd get, like, packets of Coracetin and, like, Butterfingers and, like, chew it all up together. And, oh my God, it's awful now thinking about it. But at the time I was like, yes, we're about to get super fucked up and it's going to be so cool. Right. And, yeah, it wasn't really so cool, but at the time it was. But, you know, it was like, it was honestly kind of sad, because it's like, I'm 12 years old. I'm eating Coracetins. I'm, like, fucked out of my mind. Can't function. And we're, like, at the movie theaters, and I'm, like, on the walls going across the movie theaters. And I'm like, this is the best thing ever. But it's also really sad because, I mean, I remember messing around with boys that were, like, way older than me. Like, I should not have had any business at these people's house to begin with. And it was just, like, I was searching so bad to have an identity or be something or feel cool or something that it was like I was kind of willing to do whatever was cool to like fit in. So, you know, I can remember after those experiences with the drinking and the Coracita, and like it was like the obsession kicked in immediately. It was like it was almost already there, you know. It was like, oh, okay, so we need to like we need to drink this weekend, and we need to get some more C-cubes, and we need to do this, and like what other pills do you have, and ooh, who's going to be there, and who's going to bring what, and you know, it was like always trying to figure out how we were going to get fucked up. And I, you know, I started smoking, of course, and I can remember walking around like the apartment complex and being like, God, I need a cigarette so bad, you know, because I'm so addicted to cigarettes at 12 years old. But it was like this bizarre like obsession already, and like craving, and like, you know, it was like I would walk around the parking lot looking for old cigarette butts just because I needed one so bad. And as soon as I smoked one, it would like chill me out, and like it, like it's so stupid, but it was like consuming me already, like just stupid shit like that. I would spend like 30 minutes walking around the parking lot looking for cigarettes, and I'd find a couple butts and be like, fuck yes, like got it done. See, if I put my mind to something, I can get it done. And you know, just kind of progressed, you know. I was like, I was fairly responsible, like I always made good grades, I always went to school, I always took care of my brother and my family and all that kind of shit, and you know, always had dinner ready and always was cleaning and whatever. But I had definitely lost the control when it came to partying. Like, there was always way too much drinking, never being capable of stopping. I mean, I would be so shit-faced at parties that, I mean, I couldn't walk, and I'd be, like, begging people to bring me more just because I wanted to keep... I couldn't get fucked up enough. You know, I remember one party I went to. I took some pills. I had no idea what they were. And I basically, like, completely blacked out from them. I mean, I still to this day have no idea what it was. And I can remember waking up in the middle of the night and falling out of this bed because, like, I couldn't move my limbs. I was so fucked up. But I had to pee so bad. And I fell out of the bed and, like, dragged myself to the bathroom. And I'm in the bathroom, but I can't stand up to sit on the toilet, like, and I grab the shower curtain. The shower curtain comes crashing down. It's, like, loud as fuck. And I'm like, oh, my God, we're going to wake up these guys' parents. Like, holy shit. And I remember I just peed all over the floor. Like, I couldn't get up. I couldn't fucking move. And I'm, like, pissing all over the floor. The towels are on the ground finally because I pulled the shower curtain down. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. We'll just use the towels. They'll never know. I, like, put everything into the tub. And I, like, crawl back to the bed. And I wake up the next day, I'm like, dude, what the fuck was that? I was like, I think I peed in the bathroom, like, all over the place. He's like, yeah, my mom cleaned it already, no big deal. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And it was just so, like, it was so normalized that I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, like, all right, so this party and things, like, cool, all right. So, you know, it was like, all right, no big deal. But I kind of always knew on the inside, like, this isn't normal, you know, like, what other 14, 15-year-olds are out getting this shit-faced, you know? And it just wasn't normal. For whatever reason, things kind of shifted for me when I was, like, 16 to about 19. I pulled it together for a while. I don't really know why. But, like, I ended up graduating high school, like, with hope. And I don't know how I did that, but... I ended up graduating and, like, getting a full-time job. I was in college when I was 17. I, like, took care of my little brother all the time and finally moved out of my dad's house and, like, you know, got my own place and, like, you know, just kind of seemed like I'd grown out of it and, like, everything was kind of going pretty good. And that lasted for a little while. It was cool, whatever. And then... I started dating this guy, and he was always the guy, right? And I knew him from high school. He kind of hung out with, like, the druggies and stuff, so it was kind of, like, ooh, kind of dangerous, you know? And we started hanging out, and, you know, it's, like, the second time we hung out, and he's like, oh, you want to do some Oxy? And I'm like, fuck yes, what is it? You know, like, sure, let's do it. And I mean, it's so stupid. It was, like, 5 milligrams, and if y'all know what Oxy is, that's, like, nothing. And we did, like, a little line of 5 milligrams. But I can remember that moment like it was yesterday, like it was last week. I mean, I remember the song playing, like Go DJ. Oh my God, so stupid. I know. That song was playing, and like I remember doing it on the coffee table, and I remember it hitting me and tasting the drain and being like, yes, this is it right here. Like, this is the best feeling I've ever experienced. And that lasted a while. I was not naive about drugs, but like, I just didn't know. I didn't know you could get physically addicted to something. Like, I just didn't know that was a thing. I just had no idea. And I was working full time, going to school, like had my brother, like I'm functioning, you know, I'm like highly functioning here. And then I remember like we ran out of Oxy one night and I was like, okay, whatever. And he's like making a big fuss about like, oh, we need to find some shit. And I'm like, dude, whatever. Like, we'll find some. Calm down. And I went to work the next day and like a few hours into work, I'm like, I'm sick. I think I had the flu. Like, I call him and I'm like, yo, I'm really sick. I don't feel good. I think I'm going to go home today. He's like, yeah, you're dope sick. And I was like, what? And he's like, you're withdrawing. And I was like, from what? I don't understand what you mean. I'm withdrawing. And he's like, you're dope sick. You're addicted to Oxycontin and your body doesn't have it and you're withdrawing from it. And I was like, I'm not very clear about what you're saying right now. And it was like, well, fuck, we can't be dope sick. Like, it wasn't like, oh shit, this is some major shit. It was like, well, we can't be dope sick, you know? So, like we can't let that happen. I've got to work here. And it was just a, you know, it was kind of a slow progression, but a fast progression all at once. It was slow because I maintained it for a couple of years without anybody really knowing what was going on. Like, my mom really had no clue what was going on for a long time. But it was a fast progression because it was like, oh, I'm sick. Yeah, we're never letting that happen again. And from there on out, it was just like, do whatever you can to not be dope sick. You know, and it turned from Oxycontin to, you know, kind of whatever we could get our hands onto. And I mean, within months, I'm like selling a large quantity of pills. And I mean, I don't know how my ass didn't go to jail, honestly, or prison. I really don't. I don't know how I didn't get busted because I had a lot of fucking pills all the time. And it was like through somebody that was stealing from the pharmacy worked. I don't know how I didn't get caught. I really don't. But, you know, all that's kind of going on. And then my dad gets diagnosed with cancer. And again, my family's not here. Nobody's here. My mom and my stepdad and my other brother live in Colorado at this point. So it's just me and my dad in Georgia. And he gets sick with cancer, and there's nobody here to take care of my sick dad but me, or my brother but me. So, you know, he lost his job. He lost his house. He lost his car. He lost everything. And him and my brother ended up moving in with me, and I've got me, my boyfriend, one of our friends living in the living room, and then my dad living in the living room, and my brother sleeping on a mattress, and six dogs in a one-bedroom apartment. Oh. Okay? But it's all good, right? It's all fine. At least we're not dope sick. It was a nightmare. But it was like, again, it was like I'm so used to the chaos that it was like, oh, okay, whatever. This is what life's throwing at me. Just got to roll with the punches. Keep going, you know? Like, I don't know how I functioned like that for so long, honestly. but, like, it was like that crazy was my normal. And the crazier it got, it was just, like, my normal. It just turned into my normal. You know, like, my dad was sick for about 6 months, and he was in hospice, and he passed away 6 months later. He didn't last very long after radiation and chemo and all that stuff, and my stepmom miraculously appeared the day after he died and took my brother from me because she legally still had custody over him. So after my dad died and after my brother got taken from me, I was just kind of like, I'm done here. Like, I'm done trying. I've, like, kept it together long enough, and I don't really give a shit anymore. Like, I'm so broken that I just don't really care anymore. And the only thing that was really numbing any of that pain, or not even making me aware of the pain, really, was continuing to get high. And that was the number one priority from then on out. You know, I dropped out of school. I lost my job. I didn't do anything. Like, I'm basically living off my mom And my boyfriend's living off me, living off my mom. And, yeah, she loved him. My mom loved him. And it was just like this, like, worthless life, really. I mean, I was not productive in any way, shape, or form to anybody. And again, I think what's so kind of crazy and mind-blowing to me is, like, that was normal to me. Like, it wasn't, like, this weird, like, thing, like, cry for help. Like, oh, God, I should really get my shit together. Like, it was just, like, no, normal. Like, I think, Lindsay, you've heard this story. This was normal, okay? Waking up one morning, and, like, my pill hookup is like, hey, I've got to go to the pain management clinic to see the doctor before they refill my script. I'm like, word, let's get you there. Like, we need these, you know? So this lady is a paraplegic. She was shot in the chest by her boyfriend when she was, like, 18. So she, like, can't move. She's in a wheelchair, like, can hardly move her upper limbs. And we get to, this is a crack house, mind you, like, straight up crack house. We get there. She's in the shower when we get there. I don't know how she got in there. And she's like, hey, I need you to come get me out. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. So she's, you know, naked in the shower. She's like, will you finish washing my hair? I'm like, all right. So I'm washing her hair. And I'm like, how are we getting you to the pain management clinic? It's like pouring rain. She's like, well, you're going to have to throw the wheelchair in the back and we're just going to have to make do. And I'm like, all right. So we throw the wheelchair in the back and, you know, we get her in the truck and she's like, oh, no, 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 the cat. And I'm like, yeah? And she's like, well, I don't know who's in the house right now. They might kill the cat. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know who's in the house? She's like, I don't know who those people are. I'm like, you don't know the people that were just in your house? She's like, uh-uh. I'm like, all right, so why are we worried about the cat? She's like, well, they might kill the cat. They're all cracked out right now. And I'm like, so are you. Why are we worried about the cat? Like, and she's like, I'm not going unless we get the cat. I'm like, all right, fine. Where's the cat? She's like, I don't know. He's inside somewhere. All right, fine. I'll go find the cat. I'm inside. I find the fucking cat. I'm like bringing it to the car. She's like, no, you got to put it in a box. We can't just put the cat in the car. I'm like, why the fuck can't we just put the cat in the car? Like, seriously? So I find a, like, beat-up, wet cardboard box that was outside, so we put the cat in the car. Like, I mean, that's, like, insane. And to me, it's, like, totally, I mean, I'm kind of like, all right, this is a little much, lady. But, you know, to me, it's like, whatever, we need to do what we need to do, get this bitch to the fucking pain management clinic, because I need this script of Oxy's right now. So, you know, we get the cat. We go to the pain management. It's pouring rain, mind you. So her wheelchair is soaked when we get there. It's like, you know, my boyfriend had to pick her up to put her in the wheelchair. She is completely dry. I mean, we looked strung out. You know, we're pulling up in this parking lot, and they're like, yeah, we know what's going on here. And we're like, yep, thank you. We're paying you. Thank you. Just let's go here. But that was, like, really normal. That was like a normal day for me to just do what we needed to do to get the pills. You know, another example of, like, normalcy was when I was selling dope to a few people that, for whatever reason, trusted me to sell them dope. It was like, I wasn't giving them dope. I was giving them chopped up vitamins. Like, they will never notice that they're not getting high from this shot. They'll never know. And I'm, like, literally chopping up vitamins and letting people shoot it up, and I'm like, God, I hope they don't die from it. Like, I'm like, what vitamin's the safest? Should we just do a multivitamin? Like, I mean, I would rather spend $4 on a bottle of vitamins and, like, sell these people something that might kill them. I don't fucking know. I didn't do any research on that. But again, it was just like normalcy, you know? Just like, oh, well, this obviously makes sense to sell them nothing and keep their dope, and we made money off of it all at the same time. And, you know, it was just, it's like another world from where I am now, but it was just so normal at the time. And it's just kind of crazy how your, like, life kind of gets consumed by that, because you don't really know any different. You know, I think I was always kind of searching for an identity. I just, like, wanted to fit in with somebody, anybody, anywhere, whatever. I always joke around that I was, like, a really confused white girl, because I'm, like, driving a black truck, and I've got, like, skateboarding stickers and, like, snowboarding stickers, and I'm, like, listening to rap music, but I, like, wear high heels and look nice, and I'm, like, I was just really confused. I just didn't know what I was or who I was or what I was trying to, you know, what message I was trying to get across. I just, like, wanted to be liked and wanted by anybody, somebody. So, you know, that craziness lasted a while, way longer than it probably needed to. But, you know, I finally got to the point where I was waking up and miserable. I mean, just that simple. I was just miserable. You know, it didn't matter if I was high or not, dope sick or not, you know, what we were doing to get dope or pills. It was just like, I was just unhappy internally. And I finally broke down one day, and my mom had moved back at this point. She kind of started to figure out something was going on, so they kind of wrapped it up in Colorado a little bit sooner than they had planned and moved back here. And, you know, I called her over one day, and I'm, like, in the car with her, and I'm like, so I'm a drug addict. And she was like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, I've known something's been going on for a while. I'm like, oh, really? I thought I was being really sly about that. And she's like, no, it's been pretty obvious that, like, you've been going downhill. All right, cool. So we try everything, of course. I want to try, like, hey, let's try the methadone clinic. Let's try the Suboxone. Let's try the counselor and the addictionologist and the therapist. And, you know, like, we do this whole thing. And, of course, I don't get clean. And that lasted a little while, too. And finally, it just needed to happen. I ended up getting arrested twice in 1 week and had some major drug charges coming up against me. And my mom was like, you should probably go to treatment before you go to court for all these drug charges. And I was like, fuck, okay, fine. So I find a program and we go check it out. And I walk in there, and it's called The Shop, and I walk in there, and they, like, stick me at this bar with, like, coffee and people running around screaming and having a good old time. I'm like, this is gay. This is so stupid. This isn't going to work. And then my friend, who I was getting high with, who I've known all through elementary school, Chris Rauer, walks in, and he's like, hey! And I'm like, this motherfucker. If he can get sober, you know, fine, I'll stick around. So I decided to stay at Insight, and I'm really thankful for that time period because I met a lot of really cool people at Insight, and I think I learned some things that kind of stuck with me over the years. But, you know, like, I met Carl, I met Lindsay, I met my first husband, Camp, I met Mike there, I met, you know, Rauer, I knew him, but, you know, Rauer was there, and, you know, all sorts of other people that I've remained friends with over the years. Like, it was just, I don't know. It kind of, like, felt for once like I was in my element. Like, these people understood me. We were having a good time. I guess wanted to be sober, but whatever. It was like, okay, I guess I'm going to be sober now because these people are obviously okay and kind of having a good time, so let's do this. And it was cool for a while. Like, I was there for a year and a half, and my first husband and I, you know, we met there, and, you know, we did the typical, like, oh, rehab love, oh, I love you, blah, 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 and we started dating while we were still in aftercare, and, you know, all that typical shit, and I ended up getting pregnant, and we had a kid, and, you know, it was honestly, it was like, it was cool for a while, you know, we got married, we had a kid, Rauer lived with us, a couple other guys from the program lived with us, we had a happy household, you know, and it was cool for a while, and then it was like, you know, I don't really think I'm an alcoholic, like, I'm an addict for sure, but, like, I'm not really an alcoholic, so I tried that whole thing for a few years, and, you know, Camp, my first husband, he did too. We drank for a while together, and, again, it was, like, all right. It was manageable. Things weren't, like, out of control. Like, of course, there was the occasional, like, party where everybody drank a little too much, or, you know, we got in an argument because we were drunk or whatever, but it was nothing, like, super, super crazy until real life happened, and he ended up having an affair, and, again, I wasn't equipped with coping skills, and I didn't have any other solution in my life but, like, drinking and drugging. So I, like, completely broke again. And, like, my dad dying was a pretty big deal in my life, but my husband having an affair was an even bigger deal for me. Like, that was just, I don't know why, but it, like, broke me. It destroyed me. And we tried to make it work for a little while, but it was just kind of more of like fear of being alone and the unknown and why I kept trying to make it work. And it ended up not working. I, you know, went to treatment a couple times and, you know, came back from treatment and he was still cheating. And I was like, all right, we're done here. Like, this is fine. You want to move on? Fine. You go ahead and do that. And, you know, so we broke up and then Mike and I started dating immediately. because, like, what else makes logical sense? So I'm like kind of sober. I'm not drinking or drugging at the time Mike and I start dating. I'm like in treatment still currently, but a few weeks of that, and I'm like, you know, again, I'm not really an alcoholic. I've just had a traumatic experience, and I just didn't know what to do. So, you know, I'm okay with the drinking thing, though. Well, Mike is an alcoholic, and when I'm not drinking or when I'm not using drugs and I start using alcohol instead, I'm very, very alcoholic. It's weird. yeah, it's really weird. But it was an experience I needed because up until that point, I really believed I wasn't an alcoholic. I really believed that I was just a drug addict, and I needed to smash that belief. And even though I didn't admit it immediately at the time, it became very clear to me that I was very much so an alcoholic as well. Like I could not control my drinking. I would drive drunk with my kid in the car all the fucking time. I would be completely irresponsible. Mike and I would get in, well, I would get into physical alterations with Mike. he has pictures to prove it still. I think he's blackmailing me. But you know, it was just like very clear at that point of like, fuck, like I can't do this either, you know? And somehow I convinced Mike that it would be a great idea to get high together, you know, one time. Just one time, let's get high together, let's just do some dope together one time, and then we'll get sober. So we did that for about 3 months before everything came crushing down. We spent a very large amount of money. We were just awful to each other, honestly. And I don't think we were intentionally awful to each other. I mean, how could you be a good person to another human being when you're not being a good person to yourself? And, you know, like, you can't even kind of take care of somebody else when you're not taking care of yourself at all. And, like, I just remember being in such a crazy state of mind. Like, there was just no sanity flowing through me at all. Like, we went on this bender for a while, and we're like speedballing at this point, which is just an awful combination of like, oh, I'm manic, oh, I'm depressed, oh, I don't know what I am, I'm happy, sad, awake, tired, you know, it's like you're all over the place and like about to kill each other, and it's just awful. And like, I guess a good idea of the frame of mind I was in is like, I didn't wash for 11 days. My hair was matted to my scalp, and I decided, like, you know what? I need a shower today. So I'm mad at him, of course, so I shower at him, and I get out, and I cannot brush my hair. Like, it's so matted. It was long like this. It's so matted to my scalp, I can't get a brush through it. So the logical thing to do is to be dramatic and get scissors and cut it all off, right? And I remember being in the bathroom, just pulling it and cutting it and throwing it. And he's like scared in the like doorway, just watching me. And I'm like screaming, cutting my hair off. Like, I mean, I was out of control. But again, it was like I wasn't aware of how crazy things had gotten. You know, it was just like, you don't love me unconditionally? What do you mean? Like, how could you? I mean, this is seriously the fight we got into. This is like why we broke up and went to rehab, is because he wouldn't tell me he loved me unconditionally. Okay. So we both go to treatment, thank God. I move out of the house, and we both go to treatment, and, you know, he comes back and stays sober, and I come back and I do not. I don't know why, but for some reason, I just wasn't done yet. I don't know how I wasn't done, but I wasn't. I got back, and I think I hit 60 days, and I was like, well, that means a line of Coke is in, you know. Like, we should do it. Like, Coke's not even my drug of choice, so it'll be safe. Like, this is literally my thinking. well, coke led to dope real fast, and then that was just like, fuck it, I'm drinking too, like, why not, like, nobody knows, I'm really sly. Like, I literally went to an HA meeting to pick up, like, my 30-day chip or something, nodding out. Like, drooling. Mike, like, kept waking me up, and I'm, like, drooling on myself, picking up a 30-day chip. It was, I don't know, dude, I don't know, it's, like, crazy to think that you can get to that place. So that's kind of going on. I'm using, again, like, full-blown into it again. And I remember walking with my daughter, Marika. She's 10 now. I guess she was about 6 at the time. We were walking the dog. My mom had got me an apartment because, you know, I deserved an apartment for having 60 days clean. So she had gotten me my own place. And, you know, Marika and I are living there. And, you know, we're walking the dog one day. And I don't know what happened. I mean, this is like a higher power, God, spirit, whatever you want to call it. This was God. But I'm walking there and something came across me. And it's like I felt it across my whole body. And I felt a wave of emotion come across me. And I'm looking at Marika walking the dog. And I'm just like, she's not enough. Like, she's not enough to keep me sober. She never has been. She never will be. And I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with my life anymore. And that one always gets me because it, like, hurts my heart to say she wasn't enough. But, I mean, it says in the book, there is no human power that's enough. If there was, I would have gotten sober and stayed sober a long time ago. Because she was the reason I kept trying. You know, she was the only reason I gave a shit anymore at that point. You know, she was the reason I didn't commit suicide when my husband had cheated on me. You know, I chose to get high instead to live at that time in my life because I didn't know how to live without getting high. I didn't know how to continue. I didn't know how to go another day without getting high. I was in so much pain. So it really, it like hurt my heart to like realize that. But once I had that realization, something in me kind of finally broke and some sort of surrender kind of came over me. And even though I had that experience, I still didn't know how to stop. I was still, you know, deep in it. I was still using. I was definitely going to go through withdrawal again. I'm like paranoid about that. I'm freaking out about that. But I think I was finally broken at that point. And for whatever reason, Mike was still talking to me. And I remember him saying to my mom, like, something's different about her this time. Like, there is no treatment center that's going to fix her. Something's different with her this time. Let her come to AA. Let me take her to some meetings. Let me get her linked up with some people. And it still took me a few weeks. Like, I ended up overdosing and, you know, basically died. I had to be Narcan twice, and the person that was at my apartment with me did CPR on me and broke a rib. And, you know, like, of course I wake up like pissed, like, like I'm like literally ripping the jug line out, like, why the fuck did you just call the cops, like, what? And then he's like telling me they're making me go to the hospital and they took my dope, and I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? You know, and that, but that's how insane and, you know, in the, in just in it I was, like, there was no logical thinking at that point at all. And I remember being at the hospital and I was like, all right, when are they going to discharge me, because I have some dope hidden still, and that's like all I want to do is get home to get high again. And then, like, the following week, I do so much coke, I have a stroke from cocaine toxicity. Like, it's not funny, but it's like, holy fuck, dude. You know, like, how much coke can you possibly do to give yourself a stroke? But I did. I did so much coke. I gave myself a stroke. And I have, like, really bad migraines. So I thought I was just having a migraine because all my migraine symptoms are the same as stroke symptoms. So I was just like, dude, I just have a really bad migraine. And my mom, like, came to check on me. And she's like, I don't think you're having a migraine anymore. I think you're, like, having a stroke. And I was like, please. Like, we're being super dramatic right now. So we go to the hospital and they're like, yeah, you're having a stroke. I'm like, from what? And they're like, cocaine. And I'm like, I don't know how that got there. And my mom's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, the guy that towed my truck, I smoked a cigarette of his. I wonder if he laced it with coke. mean, I'm like really trying to sell this story, you know? Like, I'm like, what do you mean you don't believe me? Like, why the fuck would I lie? You know, like, oh, my poor mother. And nobody would come see me in the hospital, right? Weird. Like, I'm like calling Mike. I'm like, I had a stroke. Like, he's like, okay. And I'm like calling my ex-husband, like, hey, I had a stroke. Don't you want to come see me? He's like, no. I'm like, why won't anybody come see me? And they're like, did you really have a stroke? Or like, what are you doing? Like, really, what's going on? I'm like, well, yeah. Anyways, so it's like I was there, but I didn't know how to get clean. And so, like, I just didn't know, you know? But for whatever reason, Mike answered the phone. I think what did it is, like, I was driving home one night, and I'm, like, screaming, ugly, crying in my truck. It's, like, midnight, and I'd just done a shot. I'm, like, perfectly good, but I'm miserable. I am screaming, crying. I am torn up inside. I can't explain how miserable I was. And I think that was the first time I really realized, like, fuck, dope isn't doing it anymore. Like, I can't live like this anymore. And I remember calling Mike, and he had, like, blocked me for a while, so, like, the phone calls wouldn't go through. But for whatever reason, when I called that night, the call went through, and I was like, what? And I'm like, can I just come over, please? Like, I don't have anywhere to go. Nobody wants to talk to me. I don't have anywhere to go. And he's like, do you have dope? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, fine, leave in the car, come over. Fine, whatever. So I go over there, and we talked all night, and something finally, I think, was just ready. I mean, it was just the gift of desperation. It was just a surrender, and I didn't do anything. It was just like, all right, tell me what to do, please. Like, just please tell me what to do. And, of course, I had to try one last thing, and so I tried to shoot up my Suboxone, and I went into immediate withdrawal. And called the ambulance on myself. And it was so stupid because when they get there, I, like, had a bag packed already because my bag was packed from the previous hospital visit. So, like, they get there, I'm like, all right, let me grab my bag real quick. And they're like, your bag? I'm like, yeah, it was packed from last week when I had a stroke. And they were like, what? So, like, I call the ambulance, they take me. So that was my last shot. I shot up Suboxone and went into immediate withdrawal, and that was my last shot I ever did. You know, great last time, great way out. But you know what? It didn't fucking matter. There was never going to be a last time that was going to meet my expectations. There was never going to be a last time. Like, let's just be honest, okay? So, you know, I go and I try to go to detox, actually, but they wouldn't put me in detox because I, you know, wasn't on alcohol or benzos. So they're like, sorry, you can't go to detox. I'm like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, no, I'm taking Klonopin. I forgot to tell you that. Like, you know, I am, you know, so I'm trying, whatever. They don't take me. So long story short is I, you know, cold turkeyed it, and it was fucking miserable. And, you know, Mike definitely got me through that time, and it was awful. And they're like, here, call this girl Megan. And I'm like, I see her at a meeting, and I'm like, I'm like, this bitch ain't going to be able to keep up with me. She's got a skirt on. This is not going to happen. And, like, we hung out for 30 minutes and, like, you know, listened to some rap music in the car. I was like, all right, this is going to work. This will be fine. This will be fine. And we did. We hit it off for whatever reason. We clicked, and, like, a really strong friendship developed out of it. And I'm really grateful for that because I don't think that always happens with sponsors. But that's what I needed, I guess. That's what God put in my life, and that's what I needed. I remember going to the apartment for the first time and cleaning out the apartment. And I think that was the first time. And Mike pointed it out to me. It's like, I found a bag of Coke. And I was like, oh, shit, look. And I, like, immediately went and put it in the toilet and, like, didn't think anything of it, you know? And Mike was like, do you realize what just happened? I was like, yeah, I just flushed the Coke. And he's like, yeah, do you realize, like, the obsession has been removed? And I was like, what are you talking about? And we, like, go through the big book, and he's like telling me about this, and I was like, oh, fuck. But, like, I just didn't know any of this stuff, you know? And it was like, I didn't try to have the obsession removed. I wasn't trying anything, really. You know, it was just like Megan was telling me to do something, and I was doing it, and I was following suggestions. And the obsession was removed without me trying to make it go away. You know, I can't, like, self-will the obsession out, although I've tried many, many a times. And that was a really cool experience to be like, oh, fuck, this doesn't have to control my life and, like, every thought in my head. And then another, like, cool experience was when my mom made me go to the Kaiser outpatient because she was like, you need to be accountable and you need to be somewhere every day. And I was like, fuck outpatient. She's like, do you, like, want me to help you at all because you're going to do this? Like, you don't have your truck. It's totaled. I just paid for it to get fixed. And if you want it back, you're going to do this. And I'm like, fine, whatever. So, you know, Mike's chauffeuring me to treatment because I'm so irresponsible, which I was. I was absolutely irresponsible. And Kaiser outpatient's like, all right, we need to get you on Suboxone, and we need to do this, and we need to do that. And I'm like, no, thank you. And they're like, well, you're withdrawing. I'm like, right. I'm like 5 days in here. I'm not about to be put on Suboxone again. Like, that's not happening, you know? And they were so adamant about it, but I just remember being like, no, man, I don't want that. I don't need that. I don't want anything in my body anymore like that. I don't want a crutch. I don't want any sort of chemical like that in my body again. Because I had tried that. I had tried the methadone. I had tried the Suboxone. I had tried, you know, all the other pills and combinations and this and that. Nothing worked for me like that. So that was kind of a cool experience too, to like see that I genuinely inside did not have any sort of want to be on medication anymore. I had never experienced that in my life. Like before, I would have been like, yeah, I need to be on Suboxone immediately and all sorts of other things because I'm crazy. Like I'm obviously manic and crazy and depressed, and I need to be on all sorts of things to calm me down. So that was like a really cool experience too, because I think for once I actually got clear-headed. You know, after the withdrawal and the kind of the first 30, 60 days, I was actually clear-headed after a while. You know, I don't think I did a whole lot to get sober, to be honest. I think, you know, the surrender was granted to me. I think that I was in a place, I think I'd been in a place of desperation many times before, but I just didn't know what to do. You know, it was like that window shut before I was able to do anything. Cause I can remember multiple times before of like, I really wanted to get sober. I just didn't know how. But for whatever reason, this time I was like pushed in the right direction, and like I found a sponsor that was effective, and I started working the steps, and you know, I started helping others pretty soon in my recovery. I think at 5 months I was sponsoring people because it was like, hey, you need to be out there like helping other people now. Like you've been through the steps, it's your turn to return it. And I think the concept that I'd never heard before was that it was an internal problem and a spiritual malady. I'd never heard that before. It was always like, drugs and alcohol are your problem. Take it away and you're fine. And it's like, no. Drugs and alcohol are absolutely my solution. My problem is an internal problem. It's a spiritual problem. And I use drugs and alcohol for many, many years to soothe it and to cover it up because I didn't know anything else. I just didn't. I didn't know anything else, and that's what was effective for me. You know, the God aspect of the program kept me out for a long time, to be honest. I did not like the word God, and when I look at it, like, that's the stupidest thing in the world, that the word God kept me drinking and drugging for so long, because I just was like, oh, God, nope, mm-mm. We're not doing that. And it's like, so just, you know, ignorant. Like, oh, I'm atheist, but I see spirits. Like, I don't believe in that shit, but like, I can talk to the dead. You know, like, I just didn't make sense. You know, like, my beliefs weren't lining up with themselves. And it was just, I guess at the end of the day, it was just, you know, fear of the unknown and fear of looking weak. I don't know why, but for some reason I thought if I believed in God, I would become this Jesus person and then people would see me as weak. I don't know why I had that belief, but I did. But I'm also really thankful that I didn't have like a concept of God, because I was able to form my own concept of God and not like keep looking back at something that I had like pictured in my head already. It was like just free-flowing to kind of figure it out. And that's been kind of cool. Like Lincoln was kind of saying, the less I try to understand and the more simply it's explained to me, it's like the more I feel the connection. If I'm trying to, like, explain to you what God is, it almost doesn't make sense anymore. Like, I can't put it into words. Like, I know less now, I think, than I did when I first got sober. You know, it's just like, no, it's just there. Like, it's just there, and I know it because I feel it and I experience it, and it's not like, it's not a tangible thing all the time, and that's okay. Like, I know it to be true now today. I think one of the most life-changing experiences working through the steps was doing the inventory. I didn't get a sudden relief like some people do when they read their inventory, but I started to get glimpses of, like, the truth, and that led to a lot of responsibility and ownership in my life and over my actions. And I realized that everything I'd ever held against someone, every resentment I had, every hurt, pain, this, that, I had also done in some way, shape, or form. Maybe not to the extent that they did or the same manner or whatever, but I have done every single thing I've ever written in inventory, numerous times. And what was really cool was making the connections of, like, hey, I'm really resentful at my mom for this, that, and this, and that, and the other. But to take responsibility for guilting her into making her do what I want for, oh, God, I don't know, 18 years because her boyfriend molested me and she didn't believe me, that was really eye-opening to be like, fuck, I, like, really used this situation that you honestly didn't know about and just obviously didn't do to me on purpose, but I used this situation for a huge chunk of my life to manipulate you, to get you to do what I wanted you to do. And that was, like, really eye-opening. You know, looking back at my first marriage, it was like, yeah, no fucking wonder he cheated. Like, I was eating pills and, like, not doing anything and not being, like, a productive member of our family. Like, no wonder he had an affair because, like, we didn't have an emotional connection anymore. You know, like, to take responsibility of that kind of stuff was so incredibly freeing because when I'm the victim, I stay there and I stay hurt and I stay mad and it's just a really bad, if I'm the victim, it's like there is no step one for me. Like, you know, and I can get there really fast. I can get there incredibly fast. Yeah, being the victim is the story of my life. I kind of came up with this ridiculous little analogy earlier today, but it, like, made sense to me for some reason. So, like, I don't know. I guess sobriety to me is kind of like driving to work, all right? Hang in there with me. Hang in there with me. So, you drive to work every day, right? And you go a certain way because that's the way you know, and it's the fastest way. But you're on the highway, you're stuck in traffic, people are dicks, people are honking, it's not a pretty view, you're, like, you know, looking at concrete and other cars, and it's, like, miserable. And you, like, want to find another way, but you don't know of another way. So finally, one day, you say, hey, is there another way for me to get to work that would be more pleasurable? Or, you know, whatever. Can I change this? And somebody's like, yeah, sure, why don't you try taking the back roads? I'll give you the directions, try taking the back roads, try taking these suggestions, right? So you take the back roads, and you're like, oh, wow, this is, like, there's no traffic, it's really pretty, there's a couple farms, like, I'm getting to work, and I'm not all worked up, I'm, like, calm when I get to work. But you find excuses to not do it anyways. It's like, well, I have to get up a little bit earlier, and, like, you know, it takes a little bit longer going the back way, and, like, you know, there's not a Starbucks on the way, right? And it's like you come up with these excuses to not do the things that you know, like, will bring you peace and serenity. And, you know, I find myself doing it. It's like I know if I take certain steps, I will get relief. You know, like, I know I will be happy. But I still, for whatever reason, will try to take the highway, and I'll try to take a different exit. Or I'll try to go at a little bit different of a time to miss traffic. Or, you know, it's like I'm always trying to tweak something and do it my way. And I just find that, like, through sobriety, my pain tolerance has just lessened. It's just diminished. I can't tolerate a whole lot of discomfort like I used to. I mean, I could just deal with it. and like and not tell you about it at all because fuck that, I'm not weak, you know. But I just don't have a high pain tolerance for that kind of shit anymore. So I guess just through sobriety, I just find myself taking the highway less and, you know, listening to suggestions more. And I don't know, it's been a really cool experience, and I don't know how I am where I'm at today. I mean, that's not me. That it's just that simple. It's not me. If I was able to get here on my own, I would have done it when I was 19. And I'm 33 now, and you know, I've only got 4 years sober, and I didn't do it at all. I was a completely different, broken, desperate, dying, worthless human being 4 years ago. And today, you know, it's like I've got a 10-year-old, I've got a 1.5-year-old, I've married my best friend, like we have a home, we have a beautiful life. I have somebody that I'm excited to like share experiences with, and I've never had that before. I've never had friends where I could call up and be like, hey, dude, this like cool thing happened, or like, hey, I'm like about to fucking blow a gasket and like actually get good feedback, you know? I've never had those things before. I've never been excited to share with my partner, my spouse, like about just something stupid that happened that day. And I feel really blessed to have all those things today. So thanks, everybody.